This is Shirley Stolzer, continuing with Dr. Margolis to the conclusion of our session with him. And I want to go on, Dr. Margolis. You told us last time that you set up a practice, a private practice in Pittsburgh around 1930. And of course, setting up a practice, I would imagine, was expensive. And at that time, we were having the Depression in America. And I wondered just how you managed under those circumstances.
Yes. Well, I had to figure this out, and I knew that there were some people here. Did you know the Dr. Shu?
Yes.
Surgeon.
I remember him
well. Well, he was a young, very fine surgeon, and very anxious to get as much referral practice as possible. And I had heard that he would lend money to starting physicians.
Hmm.
That he would be inclined to
assist.
Listen to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, he would really give them a loan with which the young physician would buy some equipment and then pay it off as he earned some money.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no other choice, really, at that mm-hmm. time. So I talked with him. I'd known him. He knew of my being in Rochester, in fact, visited me there for a period. And so he is the one who got me a loan at the Mellon Bank in Oakland here. And he was the one who guaranteed this loan. He didn't give me any of his money.
I see.
And I paid off the money to the Mellon Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So I established my office that way.
Oh, that's interesting. Because yes. I would imagine that would have been
yes.
a hard time to get started.
Yes.
And then you were initially connected with Montefiore Hospital. And I just wondered, was that because it was the hospital in the area? How did you happen to connect up? Because you had interned at Pasadena,
yes.
But you connected up when you went into practice with Montefiore.
Yes. Well, Montefiore was a more natural place to go to. It was a fine institution.
Mm-hmm.
It had practiced a fine type of medicine. I imagine I might not have gotten into any other hospital if I had applied to any other non-Jewish hospital.
I see. Because you were Jewish.
Yes.
There was some
yes.
degree of discrimination.
Oh, yes. Yes. In Pittsburgh, there was.
Mm-hmm.
So that I didn't even apply anywhere else.
Yes.
And I got along well.
And was your office not too far from Montefiore?
No.
Was it in this area of where Montefiore
was? No, I was. My office was in Jenkins Arcade.
Where
all the, that was the place where a consultant practically had to be.
I see.
Because it stamped him as a specialist.
I see.
Sometimes the specialization involved 3 months in Vienna to study.
Were there other large hospitals around at the time that were conducive to taking in young physicians on their staff?
Yes, of course, the Mercy Hospital. Presbyterian was on the north side at that time.
I see.
Just moved to Oakland later on.
Mm-hmm. And St. Margaret's, where was that located?
St. Mark was in Lawrenceville.
Now you had mentioned that they invited you to be on their staff and then mentioned that you set up a service there in the oncology department. How did they come to you? Had they heard about you, or were they first interested in setting up an oncology department and then looked for someone like yourself?
I would imagine that it was something on this order. St. Margaret's was a very fine community hospital, It had a very good orthopedic surgeon who didn't do much surgery. He did plaster casts, etc. Yeah. Anyway, I got to be known through some lectures I gave. Lecture of the County Medical Society, you know, on their regular series. And I brought Dr. Hinch here for a lecture after he got his Nobel Prize. Mm-hmm. And so I was known to be a trained rheumatologist. And it was a pretty natural thing for St. Margaret's to want to increase its service.
I see.
And I would imagine it was the orthopedic surgeon who played a part. Mm-hmm. So they invited me, and it was a wonderful relationship.
Were there other Jewish doctors at St. Margaret's?
Yes, there were.
A lot of them were at Montefiore.
Yes. Yes, there was one very fine general practitioner there. Mm-hmm. Who was highly respected and for good reason. And I don't know of any others, I don't remember.
Yes. Now, did you stop your association with Montefiore when you went to St. Margaret's, or did you maintain both?
No, I maintained both.
I see.
As a matter of fact, I needed St. Margaret's then very badly because I was pretty busy by then, and I couldn't get the number of beds I needed for admission of patients at Montefiore. Montefiore became really a busy surgical hospital. Mm-hmm.
Because at St. Margaret's, you said you set up a whole department there and they were happy to have it, but at Montefiore...
It was very hard.
Yes.
Very hard.
Mm-hmm.
The surgeons got preference because the hospital benefited from the fees they charged for use of operating room, etc.
So. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned, too, that I don't know exactly when gold became a treatment for hepatitis. Did you introduce it to Pittsburgh? Were you the first to use it here, do you know?
Yes, because there was no one else, really, at that time who practiced rheumatology in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So I introduced it, yes, here. And that got to be known. And I would lecture county medical societies all around Pittsburgh.
About this new kind of treatment?
Not just that, but about the management of arthritis, and actually I would add about this new additional form of treatment which we had, and it proved to be useful and beneficial.
You also mentioned at some point that people were always of great interest to me. And I think you did it in relation to your profession, your selected professional area, rheumatology. And I wondered if you could elaborate a little bit on that, how that connected up.
Well, I always was extremely interested in people as persons, mm-hmm. as well as people, professions, and so on. It was so that it got recognized, and as you know, Eleanor Cockrell, who was a professor at the School of Social Work, who became a patient of mine, asked me if I wouldn't come to teach at the School of Social Work, which I did, and with a lot of satisfaction.
I was one of your students.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Yes, I enjoyed that.
You did. You injected the social aspects of rheumatology.
Yes.
At that time.
Yes, I had to study really to prepare for this lecture. Mm-hmm. But I was intrigued by the idea of emphasizing also the social aspects of illness and so on.
Has that become a part of the whole practice, that the social aspects, the social workers' contributions at in this in the department? Is this part of the way you operate?
Yes. I felt that this was a very important aspect of medical care, which wasn't recognized, really wasn't recognized totally at that time. For example, the Mayo Clinic, a social worker came in 1929, first one, and they were sensitive to all of the progressive aspects of medical care, but not that. And that was true, of course, in many big cities and the East.
But it was it also part of the whole disease area, so to speak, in that the other aspects of the patient's life contributed to the condition? Was that part of the reason social workers were involved?
In medicine,
yeah.
The social worker was first involved, as you know, in Boston through the work of Richard Cabot. There it was because he wanted to have greater recognition of a person as an individual in society and in relation to the illness. And also, I think because many of these people couldn't pay. There was no Blue Cross or Blue Shield or Medicare, of course. And so often the social worker came in really as an intermediary in arranging for medical care.
I see.
That's really probably the chief, chief reason she came in. Because these people would come to the institute or hospital, often without any ability to pay. So they don't have to be.
But as time went on and social workers became part of the team effort, so to speak, was their contribution something that gave a better understanding of sources of some of the conditions?
Yes, of course. That's what developed later on, that the social worker really became an integral part of the medical team. Yes.
Okay, now we're going to go on a little bit to talk about what kinds of professional activities you've been in over the years here, positions, kinds of positions you've held, just to understand what you've done in Pittsburgh as a rheumatologist of note.
Well, that's interesting because I was never much interested in the politics of medicine.
Oh.
I was highly accepted by the county society, but it never would occur to me to think of trying to work myself up to become president of the county society. That was the least interesting part of medicine,
right.
So that I was never much of a politician in medicine.
Nice. So you were on the periphery of medical activities?
Very much so, yes.
How about communal activities, the Jewish communal activities, for example? Were you in any way involved?
Yes, of course. I played some leading roles in the United Jewish Fund annual solicitations, and did that and enjoyed that and contributed much more liberally than I should have in those days. But I did, and but that was the extent to which I would deal with it.
You weren't active in any synagogue like Rebbe Shalom or any of those kinds of Zionist organizations, or the Home for the Aged, Jewish home.
Yes, they, and I was at Montefiore. They got me on the medical committee for the home, and I played a very active part in arranging and, how should I say, recruiting medical help
for the age?
For the home for aging.
Yes. That's interesting. But you weren't in the Zionist organization when you...
No, I was a member of the Zionist organization, but never acted.
Not acted.
Because I was really too busy, first as a student, and then as in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really concentrating very much on these two boys.
Yes.
And
you were playing.
Even though they were doing well on their own, they were always on my mind.
Right.
So that for me to go to meetings of the Zionist organization or something was much less interesting.
Yes. With the limited time that you had available for
the
family.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And what were your social outlets with other physicians primarily?
Not necessarily, no. They were more broad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
More broad than that.
Okay. Okay, one of the last questions I want to ask you is, if you could contrast for us or make some comparisons with what it was like to practice medicine when you started out in the 30s as compared to today, the medical profession as such.
Well,
it's a big question, I understand.
The growth of medical science. It's absolutely amazing, even to one who has been right in the field, because we saw it grow day by day and year by year. But it must be very striking to an outsider who reviews it, so that the change was particularly striking in this field that I was in, rheumatology. Actually, it was the most primitive type of treatment that we had available to us in 1927, 28, so on. But we had to do the best we could, and we tried to develop artificial fever for treatment and so on. But the growth of medical science has been one of the most stirring experiences of any human being who was involved in it particularly. And to me it was has been a great boon.
Today there are a lot of outside agencies, governmental agencies involved with medicine. I would imagine that when you started out, you had a fairly free hand in comparison to today.
Yes, but actually, you know that book I wrote on arthritis?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. What book was that?
Hmm?
What is the name of that book?
Arthritis and Allied Disorders.
Okay.
Well, in the introduction there,
mm-hmm.
I have some statements indicating, indicating that we need social organizations who will help the practice of medicine. That we needed the equivalent of the Blue Cross
to assist patients in
getting
to proper
health in the economic sense,
mm-hmm.
and. I felt that we should have compulsory medical
payments,
yes,
mm-hmm.
for all people. Mm-hmm. I was very, very strongly in favor of a universal prepaid medical care system, such as they have in Britain.
Right.
I never was disappointed when that developed, when it came.
Mm-hmm.
When Blue Cross came in, I welcomed it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only was it good for the patients, it was good for us, for physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing applied to Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
remember the fight by the medical profession then, which I thought was absurd.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play any active role, but I had my ideas about it, and I sort of felt it would come by naturally out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Which it has. However, it has also moved even further, as I understand, in terms of involvement and setting limits on what can be done for what amount of money and so forth, which I would imagine would limit the physician's freedom of
yes.
to be hospitalized and in what condition.
Yes, it sure does. But that's part of the totality of the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is, first, patients could get care,
mm-hmm.
could be admitted. Because if you can imagine me feeling that I could contribute in medical practice, but having patients who would come in to me and tell me right off, doctor, I was told to come to you, but I'll tell you I cannot pay the kind of fee which you probably charge. And so I was broke, I lost my business a year ago or 6 months ago. So,
mm-hmm.
so not only could we take care of these people, but the doctor could get the benefit of experience with medical care. I always felt I learned a great deal from patients, which I did. When gold came in, you couldn't charge patients for gold treatment. They didn't have the money. So I created an artificial study group, practically. At the university medical clinic, which I organized, I was able to get a large group of people in whom I could test whether gold really works.
Mm-hmm.
And I was more interested in that than I was in whatever money I could earn.
Mm-hmm.
Money was never my primary, just by somehow natural course of events. It was never my primary concern because I never had much of it to get me intrigued with it, really. I enjoyed when I was able to earn it.
Yes.
When I, after I having it. None.
Right.
But that was not my primary interest.
Mm-hmm.
So those were my social interests in medicine.
I have asked you the kinds of questions that I was interested in hearing more about. Are there some things that you want to leave us with, any thoughts that you would have that you'd like to add at this moment?
Well, I think my experience taught me that living the best way as a human being helps, but does not eliminate antisemitism.
Mm-hmm.
It helps counter it.
Mm-hmm.
That having ideals with regard to study, with regard to achievement in a high level of study and profession, gives you the opportunity of success, which you might not have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in truth, I never felt the sting of antisemitism, although I knew it existed,
mm-hmm.
as sharply as so many others did.
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute that to my constant effort to thwart it.
Mm-hmm.
By achievement and so on.
Just tell me, it just occurred to me. I read an article the other day that role models are not near as important as heroes. Did you have heroes?
Yes, indeed. As I told you, my first were the heroines.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt, the school teachers I worship.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew of a teacher that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
They were the greatest people.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Dr. Hench,
yes,
and other doctors, older physicians,
mm-hmm,
I knew. Yes, I really respected him. I followed through.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't do me any harm either.
No. But you had yours that you looked to in your life.
There was a doctor here during my internship here in Pittsburgh, who through marriage was a very, very wealthy man.
Mm-hmm.
And he had ideas about the medical library, which he created through reprints that he was getting about articles in medicine. And he was very proud of this library, which was handled day by day by a special librarian secretary in this home on Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me one day at the Pasadena Hospital, he's invited so many doctors, but no one ever came out to visit him. And he was rather,
mm-hmm,
surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll be coming
to
out
see
to
see his
it.
Library.
Yes.
I see.
So I said, you'll be surprised. I will come out. I'm going to call you someday, which I did. And it was a delightful afternoon. And we had tea in his library, and I saw for the first time really what a beautiful millionaire's home is like. And he is the man who said he knew Dr. Will and wrote the letter, because he was impressed that I was the first one who ever came out to see his library.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so these heroes came naturally to me,
yes,
in the course of the daily work.
Good. Well, I want to thank you very much.
Well, it has been an interesting experience.
A beautiful experience for me, and I'm sure today for
tomorrow. I'm sorry, I missed the initial interview.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for trying to get it. I suppose you really wished that this would be a Jewish doctor who was deeply involved in all kinds of Jewish affairs.
No.
Also,
all we want to know is what your life was like as a person in our Pittsburgh community, and being Jewish, we interviewed you, but that is not the primary thing.
But that was it. So now you know all about my life.
Yes, and if you have any photographs, if you have any kind of, well, we know of your book, if you have any copies, for example, a copy of that letter that you are so delighted about from Dr. Hench, or any kind of publicity, we would like to insert that with our tapes.
Okay, I'll do that.